You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award winning boutique wealth manager. With me today from Brenthurst Wealth is Maria Smit. Now, Maria, you sent me an article, and this is the sort of article I like to read and podcast because it's something I understand, and also at the same time, it's terribly important. The headline is Key Investment Terms Every South African Should Know. Why did you read it? Is it because you found people were lacking in knowledge?
Yes, so I wanted something on hand to quickly, if a client has a question about what this is or what that is. And sometimes I just like sending this to clients with a proposal so that it doesn't just sound like word soup if they read my proposal, that they understand where things, how it works, where everything comes from. So that's why I wrote it.
Very good. Well, it's a good thing that you did. And it's also a good thing that you say we have a world filled with jargon, fine print and complex products. Now, I'm going to assign blame here. Jargon, media and financial services, fine print and complex products firmly lays in your court there. The blame lies with financial services, I'm afraid, Maria. Not Brenthurst Wealth, I might add. I'm just saying financial services in general has a tendency occasionally to lean towards the unintelligible. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah, you can't understand it. So anyway, let's get on with that. Let me not philosophize here. When I talk about things like CPI and GDP, or someone else does when I'm talking to them, I often sort of stop and say CPI is consumer price inflation, GDP is gross domestic product. And apart from arming people with knowledge, it also arms people with confidence for when they listen to another podcast or they go into a meeting with somebody who's trying to explain the product that they're trying to sell them. Do you see what I mean?
Yes. That's exactly what we try to do at Brenthurst as well. We don't just want to invest your money. We want to help you, teach you to understand how your money is invested and why it's invested in certain types of products.
Let's start, shall we? And let's start right at the bottom. But it's certainly not the bottom. It's probably actually at the top. What is an asset? Please tell us.
So if you look at all the things you own, basically, that creates, that can generate money for you. If you have a rental property, if you have equities that can grow, if you buy a government bond and that bond gives you a rate every month, that is an asset that you own.
And it could also be something that you might not consider traditionally to be an asset. It might be a vintage car, an old painting that you found in your attic, or it could be a Fabergé egg. So not just stocks and bonds and properties.
Yes. But in the investment sense, that's usually what we mean with assets, the type of stuff that an advisor can manage.
Okay.
When we speak about an asset, yes.
Good. Now, what about a portfolio of assets? What is a portfolio?
So that is the basket of everything you own. So that is, if we send you a statement of your portfolio, it will be all the basket of everything you own.
Diversification. I hear about this a lot. You've got to diversify. But what does it mean?
So that basket of your portfolio cannot just on one side be, for example, gold or just be properties. You need to diversify because if one sector in the economy is doing well, you want to gain access to that. You don't want to sit on something that isn't growing. So having a bit of everything, then you can get the growth from each individual egg in your basket at different times, because usually they grow at different times.
Okay. You at Brenthurst Wealth are advocates of diversification, are you? Do you believe that diversification works?
Yes.
Good. Yes. Now, the next one, I'm going to give you two examples. It's to do with liquidity, and I'll go to two extremes, a house, your house, or NVIDIA stock. You own some NVIDIA stock and you own a house. Now, that's a classic way to illustrate what liquidity means, I think.
Yes. So at the end of the day, you are going to get a seller for the NVIDIA stock a lot quicker than what you're going to, or a buyer for the NVIDIA stock a lot quicker than you would get a buyer for your house. And at the end of the day, there's certain assets you need in your basket that you can trade for cash very quickly. If you think about a retired person, they cannot use a living annuity to buy a car. So they need liquidity in their portfolio for when they are 82 and need to buy a new car or need to get a big medical procedure. So that's what liquidity means. It means you need an asset that you can put into cash very quickly when there's an emergency.
All right, next one. What do you mean by the trade-off between risk and return?
That is such an important thing that I want clients to understand. There is a fine line between risk and return. So you need to take a bit of risk in your portfolio to get a better return. Staying safe or just being in a safe portfolio would be great for a year or two. If you compare a money market to the last, say, 6 months of Trump chaos, you would have been better off in money market. So that is the risk versus return trade-off. You need to have a goal for your long term and a goal for your short term and trade-off, and then not compare, say, if you have a portfolio that's only 6 months old in aggressive stocks that did not do as well as money market. That's the risk versus return trade-off.
Okay, so let's say you take on something, some very risky asset. You've got to realize that the upside potential is great, but there are pitfalls. Okay, now I understand. You talk about equities and you talk about shares. I mean, I do every day on the podcast. What, is there a difference between equities and shares, and what are they?
So an equity is basically, if you look at you as most individuals, we cannot go buy a McDonald's franchise or an KFC franchise. So owning an equity is like owning that company. That way you get the potential just like the owner would, without so much risk, and also without having a few million rand just to buy the franchise. You can buy a McDonald's share for a lot cheaper than what you would a franchise. So that's basically you own a part of a company.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better next time I go for a Big Mac now. If I own McDonald's stock, that is. I'm helping the company's top line. Okay, bonds. This is something that people don't understand. I found in my career, people understand shares, but they don't understand bonds as well. What are they?
So owning a bond or buying a bond is basically the inverse of taking out a loan. So instead of you taking out a loan and paying the interest, a company says they need a certain amount of money and they promise to pay you back the money plus a percentage. So you as the investor, your funds are basically tied for, let's say they say they have five, they need 5 years. Your money would probably be tied for 5 years and you would every year then get the interest that they promised. So it's a little less risky than an equity because they put a promise there, but companies can still go bankrupt. So it's a lot less risky than equities that are in the market that go up and down daily. So people like that. Governments also give out bonds. The same, it works the inverse as a loan. Instead of you paying the interest, the company pays the interest to you.
Okay, and with bonds, you've also got the risk factor coming in here because a AAA rating, for example, for a US government bond, if it still has AAA rating, I think it has. Anyway, the point is that you have to be careful when you have a look at a bond. It might offer a particularly good interest rate return, but there is a risk there because it's a company bond and that company might not be quite as stable as, say, a government bond. But anyway, that's bonds. Unit trusts, investing as a group. And I think unit trusts are called other things as well these days, collective investments. And in the United States, I think they're called mutual funds. But anyway, what is a unit trust, Maria?
A unit trust is just like your basket of portfolio. So instead of owning a house and owning a big office building, you own a unit trust. So you own shares, let's say, if you get different unit trusts as well. So if you look at the balanced fund unit trust, you get all those products I mentioned earlier. You get a basket of equities, of bonds, of money market, all grouped together in a unit trust. So instead of you going to the government and taking out a bond and buying direct company shares and monitoring that, you are giving that job over to a fund manager and they manage your unit trust for you, which is a mix of all the assets you get on the market.
All right, we've got two now that are relatively new, ETFs, and the other one is TFSA. What's an ETF and what's the difference between an ETF and a unit trust, please, Maria?
An ETF, you take out the fund manager, the guy that's sitting there pressing the buttons, deciding how much you put in this and how much you put in that. An ETF basically tracks what's going on in the market. So the day you buy an ETF, you buy the top shares in that market. If you look at something like the JSE Top 40, you then buy that ETF and that ETF tracks the price of that JSE Top 40, for example. So you buy them like you would buy a share, but you then get the performance of the whole market. So if you buy the S&P 500, you get the performance of the S&P 500 without physically buying each stock.
Okay, that's an ETF, and as I said, relatively new exchange-traded fund, TFSA, tax-free savings account, very popular, also relatively new, Maria.
Yes, and one thing that I see a lot in clients is they think a tax-free savings account is just from your bank. I hear it a lot, no, I have a tax-free savings account, but it's not doing that well. So a tax-free savings account is just like a wrapper. You can have whatever you want in a tax-free savings account. It is a way the government ensures that you continue saving. So you can put 36,000 Rand into a tax-free savings account in different assets. You can put it in equities. You can put it in money market fund. Your options are endless. You can only put in 36,000 Rand a year.
Okay, that's it's still really, really popular, as I've said. What are we going to go on to now? I want to go get onto the annuity side of things because people still don't understand annuities. And then after that, the list is so long, I'll go through them, but also drive people to the article via Brenthurst and BizNews where it was first published. Living annuity, though, please, Maria. Even I get mixed up with annuities.
Yes, and nowadays there are so many new terms that they give annuities. Each company calls their living annuity or guaranteed annuity something different. So at the end of the day, there's two, if you break it down, there's two types you get. You get a living annuity and a guaranteed annuity. So your pension from your employer the day you retire, you will then choose either a living annuity or a guaranteed annuity. Insurance companies also like to call it a life annuity. That is where you draw your income from your pension fund monthly. Living annuity means you choose what you are invested in. You can choose how much income you draw. A guaranteed annuity, you go to investment or a life insurance company. They tell you, okay, according to tables, you're a 65-year-old man. Your chances of going to 80s this much. As the actuaries, we decide to give you an income of 15,000 Rand and it'll increase by 10% per year. You can never get that pension back. You basically sold it to the guaranteed annuity company. They give you an income for the rest of your life. But if you pass away, you don't have anything to leave to your loved ones. Where with a living annuity, if there is something left when you pass away, that goes to your beneficiaries.
Okay. And as you say, laws change quite regularly. So speak to your financial advisor about those changes, which is best for you. And now we get on to things like TER, total expense ratio, TIC, total investment charge, EAC, effective annual cost. Not the sort of thing you hear that often. Fees is important. Well, they're all important. But a 1% fee difference each year can dramatically affect your final return. So be prepared to negotiate, or if the financial services company isn't willing to negotiate, then maybe just shop around some more. Capital gain or loss is your profit or loss. Dividend yield. This is one I want you to cover, please, Maria. What is a dividend yield? Why is it important for a share that you've invested in the company to pay you a dividend?
Yes, so certain companies like your blue chip companies, or in the US, there's a certain amount of companies that you can be guaranteed their dividend yield increases every year. So a dividend is where they say you have owned this stock, you get to share in the profit, so we'll pay out a dividend to you. So they don't give you, it's not your share price going up or down, they give you a cash amount and then your investment manager will either decide to reinvest it or pay it out to you. So those are nice shares because sometimes their price doesn't go up as much, but they give an annual dividend, and dividends are taxed differently from the gain of an equity. So instead of paying capital gains tax on a dividend, you'll then pay dividend tax, which is at 20% of that yield that you get. The company pays that on your behalf most of the time.
And I know there are certain investors who are dividend chasers. I mean, not just dividend chasers, but if they see a company that maybe is not doing very much when it comes to the share price, but if it pays a decent dividend all the time, then it's worth having a look at. And of course, take into account the tax implications of doing so. Total return, CAGR, volatility is interesting. For example, there are certain shares on the JSE that don't go up and down too much. And there are assets like Bitcoin, for example, which are incredibly volatile at the moment anyway. I think what we've got to do, Maria, is sort of sum it up and drive people, as I said earlier on, to the article, because there are far too many for us to cover. So you've done a really, really thorough job here. You sum it up first and then we'll give people some information.
Yeah, so what I did was I did a summary of most of the questions that I've had from clients. Things like, you would think it's simple, but then you would sit in front of a client and do a cash flow and they would not know the difference between nominal growth and real growth. So if you have a question regarding anything investments, this Biz News article will probably be able to answer it.
Okay, so go to biznews.com and search Maria Smith, or the title of the article. Let me give you that again. I'm scrolling up, but there's so many terms. Okay, here's the title of the article: Key Investment Terms Every South African Should Know. And I'm sure if you put in a couple of key words there, it'll come up. Can you get it via the Brenthurst Wealth website, though, Maria?
Yes, it'll probably be on our newsletter this week. So our investors who get the newsletter will then also get it. But otherwise, you'll be able to get it on Biz News.
I'll just read your final thought. It says, financial confidence comes from understanding the basics. Learning these terms puts you in control. Very, very important. And as I said in my introduction, also gives you confidence, which is also terribly important. Maria, thank you very much for your extended time. Maria Smith is from Brenthurst Wealth. And that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.